This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Rick Britton, a local author, historian, cartographer. He's online at rickbritton.com. He joins us on Friday afternoons to talk a little history. Good afternoon. Did you see that traffic coming in here?
I did. But we were out in the eastern part of the county, so we came in on Pantops, and it was just awful.
Trying to get through Pantops
at 250. It was just awful.
Yeah. Well, I was stuck on McIntyre Road, downtown, Preston. It's unbelievable. Any place headed towards, like, 29, if you're trying to get anywhere near 29, the traffic is just insane.
I just have it in my head all the time nowadays that if I'm going to get across town, I have to give at least a half an hour. Sometimes coming from Monticello to try to get across Charlottesville, because I live in the northern part of the county, it's taken me 45 minutes to get home, and we're only talking about 8
from
or 10.
From here?
No, from Monticello, about 8 or 10 miles, which is ridiculous. 45 minutes to get it's because you have to get through Charlottesville.
Yeah.
One way or another, you got to get around town and get, you know, on the other side of town.
We need that Eastern Connector.
We need something.
You should be able to go from Monticello to up to 29 North.
We need
like
something.
By going around, like a bypass around that side of town.
We need something.
Which planners have always referred to as the Eastern Connector, but, you know, piping it through Pantops, which is what they want to do, that's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
I mean, that's
it
just going to make Pantops worse, and you won't be able to get to that connector road.
And I had an urban planning student, and, you know, Lord knows he knows a lot more about this stuff than I do, tell me that it just doesn't work that way, that more roads mean more cars.
Oh,
but
of course.
You know, but if you've got so many people getting from place A to place B, and you only got two ways to go, you know, and you're dividing the cars by two, if you've got three or four ways to go, why doesn't it divide it by three or four?
Because it just fills up as soon as you build it. I mean, that's the history of the 20th century.
It's crazy.
The roads fill up as soon as you build them.
Wow.
Yeah. Except for that bypass around Stanton. That's totally empty. Well, you talk about pork. You can go over there and hear the cows porking. Man, that's ridiculous. So what do you got? What are we talking about today?
Well, you know, first I wanted to tell you I'm working on this great project. I'm doing maps for a book about Thomas Jefferson's father, about Peter Jefferson and Shadwell. And right now on my table, I'm drawing a map about Shadwell. But the interesting thing about this is it's by an assistant professor down at William & Mary, Susan Kern. And the thesis of the book is really neat. In the past, and you know this, so I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but in the past, everybody has portrayed Jefferson as a little boy who's grown up on the frontier, and there was nothing much about Peter Jefferson. And the amazing thing was that this boy from the frontier, from basically a farm, you know, could grow up to be the author of the Declaration. Well, she's an archaeologist, and based on what they dug up, what they brought up, and other research that they've done, Shadwell had the best from the Tidewater that you could possibly have.
Yeah.
So they had a house out here that was just as nice. It might not have looked as nice on the outside, but once you got in, they had fine china, they had silverware, they had the best furniture.
Yeah.
So they established here a little piece of Tidewater, and it was a well-to-do family. Peter Jefferson, after all, was a member of the House of Burgesses.
Yeah, incredibly accomplished guy.
Yeah. It's just that, you know, according to his son, when his son wrote about his dad's book collection, supposedly only had 20 in the bookcase. Well, he was a busy guy, Peter Jefferson. So, you know, but to Thomas Jefferson, who had, you know, at one time...
That's still a lot of books, though, for a house on the frontier.
It is. Yeah. It is. But it's going to... Hopefully, the book will change people's perception about, you know, what life was like at Shadwell when Thomas Jefferson was little and growing up.
But Americans like those humble, modest beginnings.
Abe Lincoln. Abe Lincoln.
We like that story, but this ain't one of them.
This ain't one of those stories.
No. His dad was very smart, very talented, very well-connected,
and evidently
fairly well-to-do.
Yeah, and evidently very large and very strong. There's some amazing stories about what that man could lift. So he was a big guy. Peter Jefferson.
Interesting.
Yeah,
good
it
stuff.
Is.
Well, we'll
it
look forward to that. Maybe we get her on the show and talk to her.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah,
but
I know Susan.
Wanted to tell her. Oh, you know Susan?
Yeah, I went to school there.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, nice lady.
And I married a historical archaeologist, so I know some of these people.
You did. You know, I knew that. I knew that. But we've got down at the Senior Center, we've still got this ongoing Civil War lecture and day trip series. And coming up in a couple of Wednesday, September 16th at 6 o'clock, Ron Wilson, who was actually the historian at Appomattox for 25 years. So he knows a little bit about the Appomattox campaign and the end of the war. He's going to be talking about the Battle of Five Forks. And as we mentioned earlier, it's often referred to as the Waterloo of the Confederacy, the Waterloo of the South. It was fought on April 1st, 1865. So it's only 8 days before the surrender, Robert E. Lee's surrender at Appomattox Courthouse, you know, all those miles to the west. Basically what happened was, and Grant was a really smart guy, and he knew how to end the war. He outnumbered Robert E. Lee about 2-1 in the siege of Petersburg and Richmond, and the way to break the Confederate lines was to stretch them further and further and further, because Lee's resources were so limited. And so Five Forks is a crossroad, and it joins at the crossroad. Five roads are joined, ergo Five Forks, on the extreme west of the Confederate line. So it's southwest of Petersburg. And of all the people to have in charge out there at the Battle of Five Forks, Major General George Pickett. So not the sharpest knife in the Confederate rack to have out there commanding on your flank. So Pickett had some of his own division, not all of his own division. And there were some cavalrymen that fought dismounted under Fitz Lee, Robert E. Lee's nephew. But basically, when they should have been at the front with their men, Fitz Lee and George Pickett were having a shad bake a number of miles behind the lines.
Oh, my gosh.
And so when the defecation hit the rotary ventilator at the Battle of Five Forks, Pickett wasn't even at his post. And this led to his removal from command during the Appomattox campaign.
Where was Lee at the time of Five Forks?
Lee was at his headquarters just outside of Petersburg.
Okay.
So he's relying on this guy who's, you know, not a stellar commander to hold on to that right flank. And of all the people to have in command on the opposite side, Grant's guy, it was Sheridan. And if there was anybody who was aggressive under Ulysses S. Grant, you know, it was Philip Sheridan. He was amazing. So Sheridan commanded a combined arms force with a lot of cavalry. After all, he was best known as a cavalry commander, and infantry corps underneath him. So he had a combined force that outnumbered Pickett and Fitz Lee, but they could have done a better job than they did. And they got flanked and just shoved right out of the position, and a large number of the Confederate troops there were captured. So it was a total debacle. But because the right flank fell, then the very next day they had to abandon the position at Petersburg and Richmond. They had to give up the capital. They had to give up the capital of the Confederacy. So this loss led directly to the abandonment of the Confederate capital, Richmond, and it marked the beginning of the Appomattox
campaign. Why is that specifically? Why couldn't they have somehow survived Five Forks by holding their ground?
They could have, but they didn't. So they didn't have enough men to hold the ground.
Oh,
so they got overwhelmed. They got flanked out of the position and gobbled up. They probably, if Pickett and Fitz Lee had been at the front where they were supposed to be, they probably could have done a better job. But it's debatable whether they could have won at all.
Yeah. How did history treat those two guys? I mean, after the war, did the South recognize that?
Pickett not so well. Pickett became an insurance salesman, basically, after the war. So Pickett, you know, aside from Pickett's charge at the Battle of Gettysburg, Pickett really has no luster, no name.
Yeah,
there's no shine left on his name after the Civil War. But Fitz Lee went on to become governor of Virginia, and Fitz Lee served in the Spanish-American War as a general of volunteers. So Fitz Lee did okay for himself. Pickett not so well.
Was Pickett there at Appomattox? One of the guys turning in his
Pickett
sword?
Pickett technically was there, and the story was really interesting. There's a famous scene just a couple of days before the surrender, and Robert E. Lee and his staff are riding along the road with a column of infantry. They're marching, and Robert E. Lee looks off to the right, and there's Pickett and his staff riding through the field just off the right, you know, maybe 30, 40 yards away. And Pickett turned to Lee turned to his staff and said, "I thought that man was no longer with the army." And for Robert E. Lee to use that kind of terminology, that man, says it all right
so
there.
So Lee knew this guy lost it for us.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And he was removed. Pickett was removed, but technically he surrendered. But there was nothing left of his command to speak of. There was nothing left of his command. And what was left, maybe a brigade or so out of the entire division, was consolidated under somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they just got rid of him as quick as they could.
They did.
Did Lee know that he was off cooking fish and eating fish?
I think
the fish
he did.
While...
I think he did because the stories got back to him. But that's just an abysmal performance in a situation where you need the most vigilance possible to be basically partying it up, you know, behind the lines when you're supposed to be at your post, you know, with your men.
It's ironic today that the shad planking is such a great event in the political calendar of Virginia.
That's right.
Because, you know, looking back, it was that shad planking that was something you didn't want to be at, obviously.
Right. And led to the end of the war. Yeah. And led to the end of the war.
And the fall of the South.
There's a great scene after Lee came back, you know, after Appomattox, Lee came back to Richmond and for a while lived with his family on that house on Franklin Street, which is just off of Capitol Square in downtown Richmond. It's only like a block and a half from the Capitol. The building is still there. It's really beautiful. In between these skyscrapers is this little three-story building. It's really beautiful. And Mosby went to visit Robert E. Lee one evening. So this is right after the war. And as he approaches, and it's dark, he notices this figure, and there's a gate, there's a fence and a gate out front. This figure is pacing back and forth, and he'd stop at the gate as if he's going to open it and then have second thoughts and pace some more. And as he gets up to him, he realizes it's Pickett. And Pickett turns to him and tells him that he's thinking of going inside, but he's scared to. He actually says to Mosby, according to Mosby — Mosby wrote memoirs — according to Mosby, he said, "That old man wrecked my division at Gettysburg." So there was animosity both ways.
Ooh, but, interesting.
Oh, yeah, that old man. And so Mosby...
Meaning Lee.
Yeah, Mosby convinced him to go inside against his better judgment. And so Pickett and Mosby went in and sat in the parlor with Robert E. Lee. And Mosby wrote that it was the iciest reception that he had ever gotten from Robert E. Lee. And it was because of his company. It was because of George Pickett.
Good stuff. Wow. Rick Britton is online at rickbritton.com. Check him out. Joins us every Friday afternoon. Thank you, Rick. Enjoyed it.
Thank you.
As
me too.
Always.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.